I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
We are in a fifth generational conflict.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
Rupert Murdoch has now announced he is stepping down as the chairman of Fox Corporation and Fox News.
It's a useless effort to reach a nuclear weapon because you cannot use it. If you use it, you got to have a big fight with the rest of the world.
If they get one, will you?
If they get one, we have to get one.
Poland's prime minister has said that his country will no longer be supplying weapons to Ukraine amid a diplomatic dispute over grain.
The Biden administration is funding both sides of the war, says that he wants $24 billion for Ukraine, and simultaneously, Biden has announced $16 billion that he is allowing to flow into Iran to manufacture drones that the Russian army will in turn use to fight the Ukrainian army.
When you ask the voters in poll after poll, the most recent poll, two-thirds of Democrats say that they would prefer to see somebody else as the Democratic nominee.
Only 5% of Americans, 5%, say the political system works very or extremely well.
Our country is going to hell. With your support on Monday, January 15th, we're going to win the Iowa caucuses in a historic landslide. We're going to crush crooked Joe Biden.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily. Here live, Washington, D.C. Today is September 21st, 2023, Anno Domini. So today, in fact, right now, Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine is visiting Washington, D.C. He's making his pitch for another $24 billion from the United States. Doesn't mean from the U.S. government, by the way. It means from our taxpayers. That means from the men and the women and the children of this country. Speaker McCarthy rejected Zelensky's request for another joint appearance, a joint summit to Congress. He's going to go to the White House later, probably after the show today. He's scheduled to be there at 3:25 Eastern. And at that time, he'll be conducting a meeting in the Oval Office with President Biden, but no joint press statement. Meanwhile, Poland has come out responding to Zelensky's insult to Poland at the UN General Assembly, where he essentially accused Poland of being a Russian actor because Poland said, we're not going to be forced to dump all your cheap grain into Polish markets and then ruin the livelihoods of Polish farmers. And in fact, Hungary and Slovakia have also banned Ukrainian grain. What does this mean? Poland has come out and said, okay, that's how you want to play? We're cutting it all off. No more arms transfers to Ukraine. No more refugee welfare. That's all going to be cut off in 2024. Here's the thing. No country on earth per capita has done more for Ukraine than Poland, bringing in over 1 million refugees. And Poland, if you've ever talked to a Polish person, is no fan of Russia. But here's the thing, and this is what the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, said yesterday in New York. He said, we will not let Poland be destroyed for the sake of saving Ukraine. He compared Ukraine to a drowning person who is trying to pull you down with them. That's what being a nationalist is all about. That's what being a populist is all about. It's about standing up for your country first, putting Poland first. When is the United States going to understand that? When is the United States government, our politicians, going to speak about our country that way, about our borders, about our culture, our language, our traditions, our people? You never hear it. They'll tell you, we need to do this overseas, we need to do that, we need to spend this money, spend that money. We need to be totally focused on the needs of others, on the needs outside the country. And that's why billions and billions of dollars more must be sent to people in foreign lands. Doesn't mean we don't care about them. But at the same time, when our country is being impoverished while we are building up foreign lands, we ask, why is this happening? Well, we're going to look into this because today on the show, in our first interview, we're going to talk all about the Ukrainian baby factories. Yes, that's right, the illegal, the black market, and the surrogate industry within Ukraine. Did you know Ukraine is the world capital of surrogacy? How did this one country, a tiny country on the world stage, become the capital of surrogacy throughout the entire world? Katie Faust joins us here on the next segment, Human Events Daily. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode. And we're putting them out every single day of the week.
In the hood, I rolled with bloods. And them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here live, Human Events Daily. Folks, I need to tell you about today's episode sponsor, Allegiance Gold. The United States is teetering on the brink of an economic meltdown. At any moment, your savings and retirement could be gone in an instant. Inflation has hit 40-year highs. Prices are spiraling out of control, our dollars buy less and less, and Americans are racking up more debt than ever before just to stay afloat. Gasoline prices are spiking and your monthly bills are escalating. This is what inflation is, that silent evil force that eats away at your purchasing power. Basic necessities are now unattainable luxuries. And when prices spiral out of control, they not only disrupt your ability to live day to day, they jeopardize your savings and your retirement. Know this, as your living expenses rise higher than the income that your retirement savings will generate, you will eventually run out of money. Don't let it happen. Protect your retirement with gold. Gold is the smartest and most responsible investment you can make for you and your family. It's a safe haven asset that protects your purchasing power and your wallet from inflation. Take it from me. It's financially intelligent for you to diversify your retirement accounts with gold and protect what you've worked so hard for. When it comes to protecting your IRA or 401k, I would only trust the best, my friends at Allegiance Gold. Allegiance Gold has earned the highest trust ratings in the precious metals industry and builds relationships based on integrity, expertise, and impeccable service. Get up to $5,000 in free silver on a qualifying purchase when you visit protectwithposo.com today or give them a call at 844-577-POSO. Don't wait. Take control of your retirement today. Call 844-577-POSO and speak with one of their experts. They'll answer all of your questions and help you get started on the path to a more secure and prosperous retirement. Time is of the essence. Protect your future with Allegiance Gold. Visit protectwithposo.com. Yesterday on the show, we broke a story talking about organ harvesting in Ukraine, the video coming directly from a child trafficker who targeted children within Ukraine using a charity called the Heart of Love, the Heart of Love charity operating out of Pechin, which is a city right on the Ukrainian-Slovakian border. Now, he also mentioned in part of his video about how surrogacy centers in Ukraine were also targeted for child traffickers and organ traffickers, and they would essentially play games with these embryos that were donated from overseas. They would tell someone that the embryo hadn't been implanted. They would say, oh, thank you for your donation. They would say the pregnancy hadn't been successful. And then suddenly, the person who was overseas, of course, the donor, would be told that there was no child. Well, now there's a child who exists, with no paperwork. And of course, they'd tell the surrogate that everything was fine. And they would take the baby and say, no, the baby's being sent off. Now, this practice has been banned in countries around the world. Most of Asia bans this practice. And yet, even in Ukraine, one of the, not the biggest country in the world, not the smallest country, but certainly one of the smaller countries in the world, is a country of a pre-war population of only 40 million, yet 25% of the world's surrogacy comes out of Ukraine. And more stories like this are spilling out as the world takes greater notice of what's actually going on there. So in order to help us understand this even more, I wanted to bring on someone who's written for The Federalist, Newsweek, USA Today. It's Katie Faust, the founder of Them Before Us. She joins us now. Katie, thank you so much for joining us here on Human Events Daily.
So good to be with you, Jack. I'm grateful that you're shining a light on what is happening through reproductive technologies and the ways that it is harming children, because we are looking at not a benevolent nonprofit that's there to help families. We are looking at an industry that victimizes children on almost every level.
Well, and so when you say that that it victimizes children, let's take it a step for step back before we go all the way down to it. Because what is it about Ukraine? Why is Ukraine such a center of this? Why has it become this world capital of the surrogacy industry?
Well, the baby making industry is always looking to cut costs. You need three things if you're going to manufacture a child in a laboratory. You need a sperm, you need an egg, and you need a womb. Sperm is pretty easy to get to and pretty cheap. Eggs, more expensive, a little more cumbersome to access, but, you know, through hormone injections and laparoscopic extractions, we've been able to figure out how to do that. Wombs are very, very hard to find. That is the most expensive part of the baby-making assembly process. And so big fertility is always in search of cheaper and more available wombs. And they tend to find that in areas where women are more economically vulnerable, you know, places like third world countries. Oftentimes these smaller Asian countries would open their doors to the big fertility industry because they had women who wanted to pay for their kids' school fees or help pay the mortgage or cost of housing or whatever it was. And so they would rent out their bodies for a year. They were desperate, economically desperate, and they put themselves in these compromising situations as a result. But then what we saw is countries like Nepal, India, Cambodia, Thailand would open their doors to big fertility. And within a couple of years, they would shut them out because they said, what is happening to our women and to the children is nothing short than trafficking. And so that is why surrogacy is banned across much of the world, because it is considered a violation of human rights.
So walk us through then. So some of these instances that I've talked about, just, and I'm hearing this from the side of actually a human trafficker. That's what even got me to this question of surrogacy, because we talked about, of course, you know, displaced children from refugee centers or refugee camps, or just families trying to flee the war, being caught up, being separated from parents, and then falling into the hands of traffickers. But then you got one of these guys who's behind bars, and I'm sure I know you read the article that we posted yesterday, and then he's the one who actually said, we also have targets or we have partnerships with some levels of these baby factories, these surrogacy centers. And that's why I wanted to speak with you today, because I didn't even realize that this industry was so completely unregulated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And let me frame this as somebody who used to be the assistant director at the largest Chinese adoption agency in the world. I was responsible for ensuring that our agency was in compliance with international, federal, and state laws as it related to the child's best interest in adoption. Now, we have layers and layers of best practice globally, nationally, and on the state level to ensure that children who have been disconnected from their mother or father are not trafficked, are not abused, are not placed in risky households. Like, we have so many layers of screening because we understand that when children are separated from their biological parents, they are vulnerable. And now what we have going on in the big fertility world is the intentional separation of children from their parents, with none of the screenings, vettings, background checks, post-placement reports required in the adoption world. Further, one of the main problems with big fertility is that it violates the gold standard, one of the greatest red lines never to cross in adoption, which is In adoption, you never have direct payments from the adoptive parents to the birth parents, to the genetic parents. If you do that, you immediately step into the world of child trafficking. And so if you are, if money makes its way to the birth mother or the birth family, you're no longer adopting a child. You're now trafficking a child. But that is actually what big fertility is built on. It is built on direct payments to the genetic father, built on direct payments to the genetic mother, built on direct payments to the birth mother. This is categorically child trafficking, even if the baby ends up going to a loving heterosexual couple. What we're doing in the world of big fertility violates all of the norms that we have spent decades establishing in the world of adoption. Both of these areas are dealing with very, very vulnerable children. One of them is seeking to protect their rights. The other one is violating their rights.
And we should mention as well, how lucrative is this industry?
Well, it's growing by leaps and bounds. You know, a lot of times we don't have the data on much of what's happening. We don't know how many kids are born. We don't know where they're going. Very often they are crossing borders. They are not, a lot of times they're not registered. Even if they are registered, they're not registered with factual information. We now have entire governments that are falsifying children's birth certificates. And instead of putting the genetic parents on the birth certificates, they're putting the commissioning parents on the birth certificate of the child. We don't know how much these agencies are making. We don't know what happens to the children that are unused, discarded, donated. A lot of times, fertility companies won't even tell us what they're doing with the unused embryos. There are virtually no limitations, no record keeping, no tracking on what's happening in this very lucrative industry. It's now up to about $14 billion, but every year it increases exponentially. You know, I get these Google surrogacy reports, and it's always like global surrogacy market expected to expand to $30 billion in the next 10 years. And I mean, this is a money hungry industry. This is not a benevolent organization trying to help people have families. It looks like that on the surface, but that's not what surrogacy is. Surrogacy is on-demand designer babies shipped worldwide, and they make a bank load of money doing it.
So we're talking $14 billion just in Ukraine, and at the same time, they're making children in these factories. Some of them, which, you know, and we've got some of the promotional pictures here, but this promotional footage does not always reflect the actual reality. These are rundown apartment buildings, in some cases bomb shelters where these kids are being held, and then they're forced to be kept there. Plus, if you've got shady characters like this individual, Dennis Vasil, who was arrested in Ukraine, he's telling us that for some of these kids, because there's no paperwork for them, or they'll claim that the pregnancy was a failure, etc., that they are taking them and then putting them into more nefarious needs. We're speaking now with Katie Faust. This is an emotional but very important discussion that we're having here today. The Ukrainian baby factories, the surrogacy industry, the trafficking of children, a new way to traffic children in the 21st century. We're cutting edge and we're innovating everywhere around the world, but perhaps we should start asking why.
You talk about influencers. These are influencers, and they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec back, Human Events Daily. You know, folks, what can I say? When you're ordering food, when you're ordering dinner for the family, you like to know where it comes from, right? You go to the grocery store these days, you go to the supermarket, and you got to be careful these days. Well, let me tell you something. There's a new company on the block, and they're today's episode sponsor called Moink. And they will tell you that their food comes from family farms all across the country. You can help save those family farms and get access to highest quality food on earth when you join the Moink movement today. Moink runs their business from a town of 97 people in Newark, Missouri, and they're helping save our traditions and our values, and it's helping save rural America with every order. Moink delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. You choose the meat delivered in every box, like ribeyes, chicken breasts, pork chops, salmon fillets, and the best bacon imaginable. Look, when Tanya Tay and I get our Moink box in, we tell you, that thing goes straight in the freezer, and then boom, it's like every single day that week or 2 weeks, you know, depending on how it goes, because in our house it goes fast, we have the most delicious dinners. For me, it's the bacon. It's all about the bacon. You can support American farmers by signing up at moinkbox.com right now, and go to moinkbox.com/poso. That's the site, and the Human Events audience will get a free, will get free ground beef for a year. That's 1 year of the best ground beef you'll ever taste for a limited time. It's spelled moinkbox.com/poso. That's moinkbox.com/poso. I want to get back now to our interview here with Katie Faust regarding these Ukrainian baby factories, these surrogate centers. Now, Katie, let's talk about, we talked about the babies, we talked about the children, how they, it's complete Wild West. There's bad actors, traffickers can get involved, but embryos going out to families that didn't adopt them, et cetera, no idea where the kid goes. But what about the women? How are the women brought into this? Because when you're dealing with a situation where, number one, obviously in that part of the world, there's already economic pressure that this is an impoverished part of the world, the Black Sea region. And then also now you've got a war going on. So you've got women that are potentially even married, have their own kids, their husbands off fighting on the front lines. And then where do they turn? Well, they start, you know, here comes this, these companies and tell them they can start selling their wombs. How did these companies select the women? And then what happens to them?
Well, they select women who make their wombs available. And the more economically desperate you are, the more wombs they seem to be able to find. And so that is why Ukraine is one of the hubs of the global surrogacy market right now, because they are in a place nationally where more women are more desperate for money, whether because their husband is on the front line, whether because he has been killed and now she's raising her children on their own. Because there's other economic opportunities that have been curbed because of the war that's happening there. But this is how it always goes with big fertility. You know, you're not seeing advertisements for surrogates on university campuses. They're looking for eggs from university women. Where do you find advertisements for surrogate women here in the United States? On military bases. Those are the women that are a little more vulnerable to big fertility needing to rent their wombs out. And so they know where to go. They know how to find the women who will say, man, I could really use a little bit of extra money right now. They're not going to celebrities. You know, Kim Kardashian is not going to be anybody's surrogate because she's going to find, you know, your housekeeper or somebody else that's going to be the surrogate for her. In, you know, as Jennifer Lal at the Center for Bioethics and Culture says, in surrogacy, the rich buy and the poor sell. That's just how it works. And right now in Ukraine, there's a lot of poor women who are in the unfortunate position of needing to do this to make money.
So what about so they're preying on poor women. They're preying on women that are already in a war-torn area. What about the biological and psychological impacts that we have here? Because we've heard stories of surrogates who died, and then there wasn't much information given to the family about what happened, conditions that they were kept in that were completely unsanitary, and then obviously the psychological impacts on both the mother and the child.
Yeah, well, there is something incredible that happens between mother and baby when you are gestating a child. It's amazing because mother and baby, even if the baby is not genetically related to the mother, there is a chimerism that takes place. There is a melding together of the two becoming one. You know, they have found the cells of, they've found male cells in women's brains, and they thought, how can this be? And it's because women keep a cellular record of every child that they carry. And so mother and child are one in a very profound sense. Certainly, the baby feels it towards the mother. That woman, even if she's not genetically related, is the only person that the baby knows. It's her voice, it's her smell, it's her body, it's her milk that the baby wants, and it's incredibly traumatic to lose that the first day that they experience life outside the womb. But talk to a mother who's pregnant. There is something that will turn even the meekest woman into a mama bear if you come near their baby, if you come near their child. There's something protective, a bond that develops between mother and child. And we do have accounts of surrogates who say, mourned because they had to hand over this child who, you know, from Big Fertility's point of view, isn't the mother at all, right? She's not genetically related. So it should be no big deal to hand over this baby, except that after 9.5 months of almost being one, it's pretty hard to let go of that one little infant. We have scenarios where the genetic parents wanted to have the child aborted, and the only thing standing between life and death for the baby was the unrelated woman who said, I love this kid. I'm not going to abort this. I'm not going to kill this child. We have situations where Big Fertility got the order wrong. They implanted the wrong baby, or the baby ended up having a genetic problem or Down syndrome, and the parents left the kid. But the surrogate said, I love the baby. I'll raise the baby, even though I'm not related to the baby. There is a profound bond that happens between mother and child. And what you're doing through surrogacy is you're paying women to cut that bond off intentionally, and it harms the mom and it harms the child.
Well, I think that we really are in, I mean, this is the Brave New World, right? This is Aldous Huxley. This is this idea of taking something that is a sacred, a biological, a spiritual act of something. I've witnessed my wife go through two pregnancies and have our two beautiful boys. I'm familiar in that sense, but I'll never actually be able to, you know, even though men can give birth now. So, you know, maybe someday
yes,
there's still hope
can.
For me.
Get with the times.
I have to get with the times. I know that it's one of the most amazing things. And yet we're monkeying around with this process when we don't even really understand yet what the long-term implications of this are, do we?
No, we don't. I should say we have a lot of information about how bad this is going to be. We already have been tinkering with children in terms of reproductive technologies for quite a while. Even just with IVF, the risks to children's cognitive development, risks to early preterm birth. All IVF pregnancies are high-risk pregnancies. All surrogate pregnancies are IVF pregnancies. And so we really are gambling, you know, with kids' life and development and outcomes. We have studies of kids where we have swapped out a genetic father or a genetic mother. And you know what? Those kids don't fare very well. They overwhelmingly have more problems with identity issues, trusting their parents, substance abuse. It seems like when we tinker with human reproduction, it just gets worse for kids. And so, you know, now we have fully commercialized the process of what should have been a child being created in the loving embrace of their own mother and father with a continuing bond with both genetic parents and their birth mother, to now this splicing of what should be one woman mother into three purchasable and optional women, the genetic mother, the birth mother, and the woman who loves and raises them. But the reality is none of these women are optional for children. Children need all three, and they need all three found in one woman.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we keep saying that children can, you know, the new normal, right? The new family, modern parenthood, modern family. These shows and these media representations of how we can change around these things. But I remember when there was that left wing group out there saying that we should get rid of nuclear families, and I said, the nuclear family is the oldest institution that we are aware of on planet Earth, because we have an archaeological record from tens of thousands of years ago of mother, father, children, all being found together, all living together. We know that this has worked over all these years. I'm not saying that everyone has to be in one of those, but what I'm saying is that we know this is the institution that turns out the best possible outcomes. And yet what we are doing is we've decided to play God, right? It's like something out of, I wish Michael Crichton were around to show us where we were going on this, because I'm sure that he would write a fantastic novel. Katie, what should people be more aware of when it comes, especially young women, when they're told, oh, just go and you know, go in for this and everything will be fine?
Yeah, children have a right to their mother and father. They are not items to be cut and pasted into any and every adult relationship. Children have a right to be known and loved by the two people responsible for their existence. And all adults, single, married, gay, straight, fertile, and infertile, need to conform to those rights rather than insisting that children conform to their desires. Ladies, do not donate your eggs. You are selling your children. Someday they will come back to you and they'll say, why did you sell me? I wanted to know who you were. Ladies, do not rent your womb out. Those babies are going to bond with you. You're going to bond with them. They deserve to bond with the women that are their genetic parent and the one that is going to give them the maternal love that they're going to benefit from every single day. Do not tinker with the creation and making of children. Beget children in the loving embrace of a marriage so that children don't have to lose anything to be in the family that they grow up in. And when you hear the term modern family, you need to automatically think that is code for child loss. That's what modern family is. It is simply a kid had to lose something they had a right to be in this family. So nuclear family all the way. It is the only institution, like you said, that safeguards the rights of children. It's the most child-friendly institution the world has ever known for that very reason. And regardless of how our world or technology evolves, children will never be able to evolve beyond meeting their mom and dad.
Amen. The rights of the children come first. Katie, where can people go to follow you, get more information from your organization?
Thembeforeus.com is everything you need to be equipped to advocate on behalf of kids.
Amen. The Ukrainian Baby Factories, Katie Faust. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit more, another biological question, supplements. Are we allowed to have them? Can we continue? Raw Egg Nationalist joins us next.
In my ear about the boring people at your office, I'm trying to listen to the new human events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec, we're back here live. So we move from the baby factories of Ukraine, where we've been talking about the globalists' dirty little secrets that are going on inside that territory, the billions of dollars at stake, not only for trafficking, for organ harvesting, but for the genetic coding that they're able to get out of that. I wanted to bring on now some we've had before, Raw Egg Nationalist, because we had Dr. Malone on earlier this week, and Dr. Malone told us that the next big push in the United States, because it's all about health, right? The next big push is about the regulation of supplements within the West, the UK, the United States. And I hadn't even heard about this yet. Then we went back, we dug into, we found articles, Scientific American, the CDC, etc. And so I wanted to bring Raw Egg on because he's been writing about this. He understands this industry and he understands health from this perspective better than anyone I've seen out there. Egg, why are they pushing this so hard right now? And what is, who are the big players in this push to get rid of the supplement market?
Well, thanks for having me, Jack. It's a pleasure to be back. I think fundamentally what it comes down to is an attempt to consolidate the health market totally into corporate hands. This is something that I've talked about with food, with the idea that we should be all transitioning to a global plant-based diet. That's about corporate capture of the food supply, because alternative proteins like plant-based meat can only be made by corporations. And I think fundamentally that's what we're seeing with nutraceuticals and supplements. It's big pharma fundamentally, but it's big pharma in lockstep with regulatory bodies like the FDA. And it was interesting to hear Dr. Malone say the FDA has gone rogue, and he wrote a recent Substack piece about that, and he was talking about the vaccines, about the justifications for further boosters, for instance. But I think fundamentally we can see that the FDA has gone rogue across the board. And I wrote a piece recently for the Epoch Times called "Who Regulates the Regulators," where I talked about the licensing process for a particular new drug called Rexulti, which is an antipsychotic for Alzheimer's and dementia patients. And it's just an insane story. I mean, I can go into detail about it a little bit more if you'd like me to.
Oh, yes. No, I'd love that, because what we're seeing here is, And that's what I said to Malone, is that these drug companies, they're just another drug cartel working with the FDA at this point. Of course, we know the issues with the opioid crisis, the Sackler family. We've all seen that. But of course, they were never sent to jail. They paid a fine. It was the largest fine in history. And yet none of them went behind bars. They were still able to make it away with billions of dollars. And so when I look at something like this, we've already talked about the revolving door between the FDA, the regulators, and industry. And so now it just seems like they're trying to essentially crush their competition. So walk us through what happened in this specific instance that you wrote about.
So a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago, this new drug, Rexulti, the drug's chemical name is brexpiprazole, was licensed by the FDA, and it was licensed after a clinical trial showed that it had absolutely no clinically meaningful benefit. There was a 5-point improvement on a 174-point scale for potential improvements. And even worse than that, the drug actually increased the risk of patients dying. So basically, you give this drug to an Alzheimer patient, it doesn't improve their cognitive function, and it just makes them more likely to die. So all sorts of questions have been raised about why this drug was ever has been licensed. Previous antipsychotic drugs for Alzheimer patients showed exactly the same kind of clinical results, and they didn't get licensed, but brexpiprazole did get licensed. The FDA hasn't said anything about the licensing process, about why it decided to change its mind and license this particular drug, but it's notable that the manufacturer of the drug, a company called Otsuka, was heavily lobbying the FDA through two patient advocacy groups in the run-up to the licensing decision. Now, there's a huge amount of money to be made with this drug. It's $1,400 a month for a course of it for a single patient, and Otsuka has already projected profits of at least $1 billion a year from this drug. So we're talking about money. We're always talking about money. It's always money. It's always vested interests. It's always people who are supposed to be, and organizations who are supposed to be independent, actually turning out to be totally compromised by the organizations and corporations in particular that they're meant to be holding accountable. There was a study recently, or two studies actually recently published, about the FDA's approval process, which showed that the FDA has much lower standards for approval now than it did 20 years ago. So in 2022, out of 37 drugs that were approved by the FDA, 65%, 24 drugs were approved with just a single clinical study, whereas in 2016, so just 6 years before, it was just 20% of drugs, or four total drugs, that were approved with a single study. So the FDA standards are slipping, or they're being allowed to slip. And I think it's quite a deliberate process, and that's certainly what Dr. Malone would say too, I think.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, at the same time, we're told, and as Americans, that the EU actually has much stronger regulations when it comes not only to the drug market, but also to food. And I can just say anecdotally that when I've gone to Europe, the food tastes better, it tastes richer, it feels like it has more nutrients in it. Why do you think that there is this dichotomy? We also see this, by the way, with baby formula. I remember when our kids were on formula, my wife Tanya was saying no, absolutely not to any American baby formula. We've got it all from Europe.
Well, I think part of it must be the food culture of Europe, of continental Europe in particular. That must be some part of it. I think that, you know, France in particular, but also other European countries, and they have a very, very strong sense of their food heritage, of the food products, the cheeses, the wines, all the sorts of the cured meats that they produce, and that's a distinctive part of their identity. And they've tried to protect these products for a long time and prevent adulteration and prevent competition from inferior products. So I think that's probably part of it. But actually, there is a very noticeable change taking place across Europe and in Britain as well, which, you know, has now left the European Union. We're starting to see, in particular, the EU and Britain go all in on GMO, for instance. So this is a very, very worrying development. GMO is now an essential part of the food strategies for the EU and for Britain and other European countries, in contrast with somewhere like Russia, for instance, which has made a pledge to be one of the world's biggest producers of organic food. So I think Europe and Britain, although we're still quite far ahead of the US in certain respects in terms of food quality and not letting certain harmful additives and products into our food, we're on the way. We're on the same trajectory now, I think, or starting to move towards the same trajectory. So it's not good.
Well, and this gets us right back to what we started the show on, because I talked about these grain issues that were going on between Ukraine and Poland, how it's become this huge geopolitical football between the two of them. Poland wanting to continue to protect their farmers, Ukraine wanting to be able to sell at a lower cost and essentially force countries within the EU to accept these deals. But at the same time, Ukraine, which had banned GMOs years ago, all back in the early 2000s, is now suddenly, in the midst of the war, talking about revamping their legislation to relax the ban on GMOs in Ukraine. And I've said for a long time that you can really read into the Ukrainian war that it's not just about the Ukrainian sovereignty, it's about the Ukrainian land itself, its greatest resource.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. It's the breadbasket, one of the breadbaskets of the world, and Ukraine's black earth soil is so valuable that you're not even allowed to export it. There are laws, as there are laws in Russia, about trying to sell the black earth. So it's one of their most precious resources by far.
One of the most precious resources in Ukraine. And we've talked about the children in the first half of the show, the people. Now we're talking about the black earth soil and the billions, potentially even trillions of dollars to be made by companies that are able to get in there. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more with Raw Egg Nationalist here on Human Events Daily.
I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
I realize I didn't mention it earlier in the show, but actually we got video up on Twitter right now. You can guys go look at this, where Ukraine, so Zelensky gave his speech at the UN yesterday, yet there wasn't a big audience there. He then went and had Ukrainian media go in and insert separate footage of his former speech at the UN to make it look as though the crowd was much more filled out. The problem was that we noted one of the people in the audience from this previous speech was actually Vladimir Zelensky himself. You can see it at the 14-second marker. That really goes to show you how much, I think, how much machinery there is behind the Ukrainian situation. So we're talking to Raw Egg Nationalist, and just during the break, we were talking about how we're poised here. Zelensky's going to be at the White House in about 30 minutes' time, and yet this grain deal becomes this massive football between Ukraine and Poland, blows up their relationship, which had been one of the closest. Poland had been one of the staunchest supporters of Zelensky's government, and yet this very issue has gone to deteriorate their relationship so much. Poland has now rejected and halted the arms transfer to Ukraine, as well as saying that in a couple of just a couple of weeks here, they're going to be ending the subsidies to Ukrainian refugees. Why is this grain deal in Ukraine causing so much consternation there?
Well, I mean, I think grain is one of the central drivers of history in many respects, and grain is very, very important, I think, in the globalist plan for the future. And we're going to see this when the climate change narrative, the climate crisis narrative, really starts to take off, and we're told that we all have to abandon our animal food based diets and start eating vegan or vegetarian plant based diets. Ukraine will be one of the principal sources for grain, for any kind of global plant-based diet. I mean, it's already one of the biggest suppliers, one of the biggest exporters of grain in the world. Many, many African countries rely almost entirely on Ukrainian and Russian grain. So I don't think that we can overlook just how central grain power is to Ukraine and is to Ukraine's place in the future globalist vision of the world.
Well, and that's right, because we keep hearing that we have to switch. You know, I said earlier in the show that actually today's sponsor, we didn't plan it this way, but today's sponsor actually is Moinkbox, which is centered around shipping, you know, frozen meat, and you can choose your menu out to everyone. Moinkbox.com/poso, everyone. But they want us on a plant-based diet because of climate change, And that being on a plant-based diet, what's that going to do? That's going to increase the need for GMOs that they claim, because you can brew so many more of them so quickly. They're able to be mass-produced at greater quantities. And then, of course, we're being told no more meat. You have to eat plants all the time only. Why is this so central to this future plan, though?
Well, I think control of the food supply is essential, because fundamentally, yes, you can transform a political system by transforming the food supply. That's the fundamental contention of my last book, The Eggs Benedict Option, which is about the Great Reset Plan for a global plant-based diet. The thing about particularly about GMO grains as well, of course, is that they're owned by corporations. You patent GMO product, and any kind of GMO product is patentable. You can own the organism, you can own the grain, you can own the plant. And so what we're going to do is if the globalists have their way, is we're going to move to a global food supply that is basically totally controlled by corporations, and that is the stakeholder capitalism vision, the WEF approved vision, the BlackRock vision of the future. And I think countries like Ukraine are central to that. The land that they have is essential to realizing that vision of a global corporate controlled plant-based diet.
Well, that's exactly right, because you control the food supply, you control farms, you control farming, and that essentially gives you total control over a population. This is something that we've seen in the U.S., this is something we've seen otherwise, where people realize that if they can't grow their own food, if they don't have chickens, if they don't have eggs, if they don't realize the ability to, or just protect those family farms like we're trying to do at Winkbox, that essentially you will be in this. You'll be reduced to serfdom. You will essentially be reduced to serfdom, and all of your choices and all of your decisions and all of your options will actually only be carefully provided to you, and you will be just living in a cubicle for your entire life.
And I think what you have to realize as well is that they're not going to do this by banning meat. It will never come to banning meat. They won't ban meat. What they will do is they will probably impose some form of climate rationing, some form of carbon credit, some carbon credit system, you know, where everybody has an individual allocation, and meat and animal products in that allocation are just priced too highly. So, you know, you could either have one beef burger a month, maybe, or you could have plant-based burgers, you know, a couple of times a week. And most people will probably choose the plant-based options instead. I think climate change is obviously, it's the central reason why we have to supposedly make this transition,
and
it will be...
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, and so of course it's going to be the central mechanism. However they sort of ration commodities with climate change, then you can bet that our food is going to be a central part of that as well.
And now, so for people out there who, because I'm looking at some of the comments, we're getting a lot of people saying they're interested. Others, you know, we've got some liberal trolls out there saying, oh, this will never happen. This is crazy. They're just laughing. What was it, Egg, that Zelensky himself said was the greatest threat facing the world today when he was at the United Nations General Assembly? What did he say?
Climate change, I would imagine, right?
He said it was climate change that is the greatest threat. Even as his country is facing war with Russia, he made a specific point, which seems strange to a lot of people out there wondering, why is he bringing up climate change? Now, I think Raw Egg Nationalist has given us the reason. Where can people go to follow you and follow your work?
You can find me on Twitter, Raw Egg Nationalist, at BabyGravy9. I have... a Substack as well, new Substack, raweggnationalist.substack.com. But go to my Twitter and you'll find links to everything you need.
Thank you very much, sir. We put it all together, folks. We have to understand the agenda, the future plans, because they're coming for every single one of us. The food supply, the baby supply, it's all coming through Ukraine. And what are you going to do? Put me on a hit list? Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore.